This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report in exile, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. On today's program, we focus on the impact of the World Trade Center catastrophe on undocumented workers and their families in New York City. Later in the program, we'll talk about efforts to provide relief to undocumented workers who are economic victims of the tragedy. But first, we talk about the impact of the World Trade Center disaster on undocumented immigrants who were or became entangled in the criminal justice system.
I'm very pleased to have with us on Building Bridges, your community and labor report in exile, Yvonne Floyd Mayer. Yvonne is a practitioner with the Legal Aid Society in the area of immigration law. Yvonne, why don't we start by discussing some of the implications of the World Trade Center disaster on your client base? You practiced immigration before that, but what has happened now with the nature of your practice?
Well, the first and most telling impact has been the general backlash against immigrants in general, not just those perceived to be of Arabic or Muslim descent. And as that's resulted in certain congressional measures not going through that would have assisted various immigrant populations. Also in particular, the impact it's had on people of Arabic and Muslim descent, or those perceived to be of that descent, as a result of what happened on September 11th here in New York. People who might otherwise not have been targeted by the Immigration Naturalization Service or by other authorities are now being looked at very closely and are being treated in a qualitatively much more severe manner than they would have been prior to September 11th. The other thing that's had an immediate impact for our clients who were detained at the Immigration Detention Facility, which was located at Barrack Street here in Lower Manhattan, that facility was actually vacated, and all the detainees held at that facility were transferred to New Jersey and Pennsylvania and other states, and we have not been able to fight the change of venues on those matters, so we're losing some of our clients or being forced to go out of state to try to continue to represent them, if not in person, telephonically, which is a real challenge.
Could you be more specific about the congressional legislation that you're referring to?
Sure. Prior to September 11th, there were several measures pending that were specifically being targeted towards, let's say, undocumented persons, particularly, let's say, from Mexico. But obviously, many groups were trying to push it to include a much broader base of people that would assist them in possibly obtaining a permanent status in the United States, a green card, which would give them the right to continue to work and stay with their families in the United States. As a result of what's happened on 9/11, all of those types of positive measures that would help immigrants have been put on the back burner, and there's been more of a focus on punitive measures against immigrants. As we know, just yesterday, this new anti-terrorism law was passed by Congress, and as a result now, people can be held for a longer period of time before charges can be brought against them. Obviously, there's issues as to wiretapping, access to people's information on the internet, email. It just has all sorts of implications. The only good thing is that there's several provisions that have sunset provisions, so they're not law permanently, but it's still just very disturbing. And then as that relates to the profiling that's going on concerning people that are perceived to being Arabic or Muslim or of Middle Eastern descent.
The sunsetting is 4 years, though,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
that's quite a long time.
Which is not great.
Yvonne, I just want to get back to the issue of representation. Now, you have indicated that your client base is being shipped off to points such as New Jersey, Pennsylvania, etc. What is the rationale behind that? Why haven't they been able to at least house people in the city? And what are some of these people, what are the charges actually that they were detained on to begin with?
Sure. Just as a matter of background, the Barrack Street Detention Facility is an immigration detention facility. It's the only detention facility that we have locally in the New York City area that houses people who are non-citizens that either have criminal records or have had some negative contact with the criminal justice system. We actually had recently just been given permission to do Know Your Rights presentations at the detention center, and we started doing that this summer, which gave us the opportunity to go in to meet with people every Wednesday or Thursday in groups to give them a presentation as to what process they were going to and to give them ideas on how they could deal with their court cases and potentially discussing whether we might be able to represent them in their cases this was not our main focus of our clients, but you know, it was a significant portion of the work we were doing. On September 11th, a decision was made, since Varick Street Detention Facility was housed in a federal building, 201 Varick Street, and it did include people who were being detained there, that for safety measures, security measures, that they were going to be transferred out. So the whole building was evacuated, including all the detainees, and they were shipped to these various locations in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and other places. Since that time, it's unclear, but as to why people have not been brought back to the facility, because the detention center is still there. However, it is clear that it appears that the facility is now being used as a headquarters for the FBI, and that people who have been picked up in the aftermath of September 11th are being processed through Varick Street Detention Center, but they're not being held there. And it's not clear why people, detainees, immigration detainees, cannot be held in other facilities in New York, either maybe at the MCC, the MDC, or other local facilities, maybe the Brooklyn House of Detention or the Bronx House. It's not clear why they've decided not to do that. As a result, it has disrupted our representation. It has very negatively impacted our ability to represent people. Just having someone in Newark, New Jersey, make going to court in Newark, New Jersey, means that your client's being held in a county jail in Hudson County or Passaic County. These are facilities that can't be gotten to by public transportation. You need to have a car to get to these facilities. The immigration court in New Jersey is not equipped to deal with people who are detained, so there's no space for you to meet with your client either before or after he or she appears before a judge to discuss their case. You are given like 5 or 10 minutes in the back of the courtroom with your client shackled to speak to before you appear before the judge. So the only way you have a meaningful opportunity to speak to your client and try to prepare him or her for their case is if you go out to the detention facilities, go out to the county jail, which are just difficult to get to. With the clients that are in Pennsylvania, it's even much more difficult. I mean, the judges will allow you to appear for preliminary matters telephonically, but obviously to do a full hearing or a trial, there's no way you can do that. So it's just been very disruptive.
What are these immigrants being detained for?
Okay, most of the people who were detained at the Varick Street Detention Facility in large part were long-term permanent residents, people with green cards, who had some minor, very minor criminal records, some with more serious criminal records, anything from simple drug possession, simple assault, and trespass issues. And I mean, it really varied, but the vast majority of them did not have very serious records. And many of them, thinking of one client in particular, had lived here since she was a very small child. But since they had never become U.S. citizens, even though they were green card holders, you know, their immigration service had the right to bring court cases against them and sometimes hold them without bond while their immigration cases are pending.
You know, Yvonne, one of the things that Attorney General John Ashcroft said is that he would use any all immigration methods or defects or problems relevant to status in order to affect an end to terrorism. Mm-hmm. Now, quite clearly, I'm not linking the issue of immigration to terrorism, but he did. And I'm interested in what you feel are the implications of this or how this will affect the client base of undocumented people who, before certainly the WTC, at least there was some discussion of amnesties for at least a limited group of people or a specified group of people. What do you think it's going to mean to hear a statement like that from the Attorney General of the United States, the kind of cases that you do and the kind of workers and people that you represent?
Well, just in terms of the short term, we definitely won't be seeing in the upcoming next few months any positive measures passed on the behalf of undocumented immigrants. Specifically relating to the issue of terrorism, for those individuals who are either Muslim, who are from the Middle East, or of Arabic descent, or Pakistan or Bangladesh, it's going to be increasingly more difficult. We're seeing that now with the aftermath of 9/11 in terms of people being arrested. We've been going out to the MDC to interview people that have been picked up in the aftermath of 9/11, and surprise, surprise, all these individuals are men. They're all of Arabic, Muslim background, Middle Eastern background. Many of them are undocumented. The vast majority of them connected to any kind of quote-unquote terrorist activity? No. And slowly but surely, many of these people are being cleared by the FBI. When that happens, they get moved from a high-security part of the MDC down to the general population, which is a good thing. But because they're undocumented, they now go to the immigration court system. And whereas in the past, they might have been able to have a bond set in their case and may have been released on bond, the way the situation is now, that's become much more difficult to happen. And the Immigration Service is looking at cases in a much more restrictive manner than they did in the past.
Yvonne, one of the other concerns that is clearly out there is that now there are over 1,000 people that have been held in what amounts to nothing more than a mass roundup. A number of the people are certainly Muslims, people of Arab descent, some are from Central Asia, some may or may not be documented. But the implications of that, since many of them are immigrants, what do you think this means for the issue of civil liberties in our country? What do you think it means specifically for those who are being held in detention without any substantive due process?
Just the first general issue, I've been very disturbed by some of the reports I've been hearing from people and things I've seen and heard. There's a major racial profiling going on. Since September 11th, people perceived to be of Arabic or Muslim descent from the Middle East. I mean, as you said, they're being rounded up. People are being targeted. People are being treated differently in a way that they would not otherwise, hopefully, not been treated previously. And what I find disturbing is that many segments of our community who would not otherwise support such activity are supporting it right now. In terms of the issue of due process, I mean, this is why my office is involved with either trying to represent or find counsel for people who are being held at the MDC. I mean, it's very troubling, the lack of access that people have to information, to resources, to counsel, to try to assist them during this very difficult process and through these very difficult times. These are people that people perceive as being bad, as being evil, and as not being worthy of having their rights enforced or protected.
Well, Yvonne Floyd Mayer, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to speak with Building Bridges, your community and labor report in exile. And Yvonne Floyd Mayer is an attorney with the Immigration Unit of the Legal Aid Society.
New York City, in cooperation with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, set up two massive help centers to facilitate relief operations from government and private agencies. At first, undocumented workers were afraid to utilize these facilities, but the situation improved with time. Its problems still remain in granting and receiving relief from the economic consequences of the World Trade Center attack.
I'm very pleased to have with us Janet Sable, who's the supervising attorney of the Immigration Unit at the Legal Aid Society. Janet, in these very traumatic times, I know you've been involved in helping set up and make function the disaster center that has been servicing people down in the lower part of Manhattan. As someone who's an immigration specialist, to what extent have people who are immigrants, undocumented immigrants, been coming into the disaster center?
That's been an issue that's hopefully changing over time. Let me just clarify one thing, that there are two disaster centers right now. There's one at Pier 94 and also at the Worth Street Center. At both of them right now, we have set up separate immigration tables to try to facilitate at the earliest point of entry into the center the ability to speak with persons who have concerns about their immigration status and what benefits they might be entitled to. The reason why those tables were set up is because we were concerned that immigrants were afraid to come to the disaster centers. There had been communications from INS, from the Immigration Naturalization Service, the commissioner, Ziegler, from there, as well as from the city, encouraging people to go and claim loved ones who might be missing as a result of the World Trade Center. But nonetheless, the immigrant community wasn't at all clear about whether they were entitled to actual cash benefits of any sort, how those benefits might affect their immigration status or whether the seeking of benefits would cause them to suffer any immigration consequences or even being reported to INS by these agencies. The number of people seems to be increasing, but I don't have any way to express how many people are actually coming from the immigrant communities across the city, but I can tell you that there are more than there were 3 weeks ago.
What are some of the issues that you have been confronted with at this point from family members or people who may have lost jobs pursuant to the disaster of 9/11?
Well, if you're talking specifically about immigrants, the issues that they're facing are what benefits are they really entitled to, and the biggest gap in benefits that are available to immigrants who were perhaps not authorized to work but nonetheless may have been working at some of the restaurants in the area for more than 15 years or working as maintenance workers for long periods of time, is that they're not eligible for unemployment benefits. And what they are eligible for, as well as citizens and lawful permanent residents, are generally eligible for benefits, replacement salary for a period of 1 to 2 to 3 weeks, depending on who they are, what industry they're in. They're eligible for replacement rent supplements or for rental assistance for 1 month at a time, depending on the month. Right now they're still paying October's rent at the centers. Some payment of bills, utility bills that were due for the particular month, and some minimum payment on credit cards. Those are the kinds of benefits that most people are eligible for. If you're legal and if you had authorization to work, and if you had been working and were therefore eligible for unemployment benefits, you could also get unemployment benefits.
I know that there were special unemployment benefits that were issued for the disaster. Are you saying that they're not eligible for those benefits either?
Immigrants, non-qualified aliens, which is a sort of technical term of art about who is eligible, are not, in general, eligible for the disaster unemployment benefits. That's correct. The people who are eligible are lawful permanent residents, asylees, refugees, and persons who have employment authorization documents that allow them to continue to work. That's the group of people who are eligible for either regular unemployment benefits or these disaster-related unemployment benefits. But for the many workers who we've seen at the disaster center, who don't fit that description, who don't have employment authorization documents, even though they've been working for many, many years, and who don't fit those immigration categories, they are not eligible for any ongoing employment or salary assistance.
Janet, the mayor of New York, Rudy Giuliani, and Governor Pataki of the state have repeatedly called for people who are undocumented, who may have suffered the collateral consequences or direct consequences of the WTC. They've asked them to come in and assert their right to benefits, that they would not be marked, that they would not be surveilled thereafter, and there would be no adverse consequence. To what extent have people trusted that, and to what extent should they trust that in the environment that we operate in today, which is one of war and tremendous xenophobia?
Well, I have to say that the city in particular has been really good on this issue, and I think the city has been working very hard in many ways behind the scenes to encourage people who don't have work authorization or undocumented immigrants to come forward, and in fact has not been pressing proof on immigration issues the way they might have at other times. And I feel quite confident that as long as someone is eligible for the benefits for which they're applying, that there is no reporting going on of stray statements that may be made by undocumented workers about their immigration status on the part of the city. And I think the city has been really supportive. I think the state, too, has been supportive, and the best example of that, honestly, is the disaster center itself, which is comprised of federal agencies, state agencies, city agencies, and not-for-profits working together to try to assist people in any way they can. we have been working very closely with all the different agencies there to remind them that if someone doesn't have a Social Security number, they should really not ask any more questions about their immigration status, but instead should bring the non-citizen or the person who doesn't have a Social Security number to the immigration table or to the legal services table, which is a sort of separate table that we at Legal Aid helped to set up, and that they should bring them there so that folks can be given advice about who they should report to and who they shouldn't. We are mindful of the fact that these are federal agencies here, and there are state agencies and city agencies that do have, whether they like it or not, some reporting obligations. But we've been working with all the agencies, and we think that, by and large, they really are trying not to know information that they don't need to know. And therefore, we're saying to immigrants, just say that you're not a qualified alien. Don't explain anything else when you talk to FEMA or when you talk to the state. Just say, I'm not a qualified alien. And it's been our experience that when people restrict themselves to that statement, that none of the agencies have been inquiring further and have not been trying to take any adverse consequences.
Are there any state-funded or city-funded services that undocumented workers are qualified for?
Not really at the moment, although there is the crime victim services. I have to say that I'm not entirely sure who pays for Crime Victims Board. I believe that may be the state, and that is a service that is available to certain to people who are undocumented. You don't have to be a qualified alien for that. But officially, no, there are no benefits that are available to undocumented persons. I mean, there are benefits that are available to completely undocumented women via the Medicaid program if you're pregnant, but that was a service that was available before the disaster. There are services that are available to people who are less than a qualified alien in immigration terms. Someone who is permanently residing under color of law is eligible for cash assistance and for food stamps. Well, food stamps is more complicated, but is eligible for cash assistance through the city. But that was true also before the disaster, so that most of the coverage of disaster benefits for undocumented persons, and by that I mean people who are here completely with no legal immigration status, has been picked up by the private not-for-profits.
I would imagine that a lot of the undocumented workers worked off the books, and there might not be a paper trail. Does that complicate things at all?
Yes, it complicates things a lot, because even the not-for-profits who've been trying very, very hard, Safe Horizon being the prime example, and in fact the sort of conduit for most of these cases, they can't give money without some proof of the nexus between this individual and the disaster, because the source of their funding is September 11th, the September 11th fund that's being jointly administered by the United Way and the New York Community Trust, and it represents literally millions of dollars that were given for September 11th victims, broadly defined, but victims nonetheless, or connected to September 11th. The Safe Horizon, Red Cross, Salvation Army have been trying to be very flexible about what kinds of proof people can bring in, so that if your employer refuses or is unwilling to give you a letter saying that you work, that you have been receiving certain wages over a certain period of time because of fear of immigration reprisals for hiring someone who's undocumented, they've been accepting affidavits from coworkers. They've been accepting pictures of the person in their uniform or at the place of employment. They're really looking for whatever they can to try to assist people, but it is very hard. And proof of employment is not the only hard part. We're finding that a lot of people, although they're eligible for rental assistance, can't prove who their landlord is because they're living in overcrowded apartments where they are paying rent to some prime tenant, or maybe not even the prime tenant, who doesn't have any legal document showing what the rental obligation is or even that a rent check could be made out by Red Cross to that person. The private agencies are having a problem because they want to make out vendor checks. They want the checks to the utilities to go to the name on the utility bill. And if the name on the utility bill is different than the name of the person seeking a benefit, they don't quite know what to do about it. And that is causing a lot of low-wage workers a lot of problems.
Janet, given the obstacles you just described, to what extent or what percentage might you say of the undocumented workers and their families who have come in for assistance, are you really able to provide some sort of a cash allowance or other forms of benefits to?
You know, I can't say. I have given a lot of advice to people on the kinds of documents that they need. It strikes me that most of them are getting some assistance on the day that they're at the disaster center. A lot of them really have to come back with more proof, but I've seen them back the next time. I don't know exactly what's happening to all of them, so it's just hard for me to say. I can say that one thing that's important for people to know is that the disaster center itself at Worth Street and also at the pier, they have their own definitions of who is a victim and who can be served at the particular sites. Worth Street, the center at 141 Worth Street, I know much better. And there, when it started, victim and the people who could be serviced there were anyone who lived or worked below 14th Street from the east to the west side. That definition has been narrowed quite substantially so that now roughly the definition is anyone below Canal Street, but even for certain of the agencies for certain things, it's more narrow than that. The important thing for people to know is that even if they don't fit into those definitions at the disaster centers, that they should go to charities in their neighborhoods. They should go to Red Cross in their borough. They should go to the other agencies that are being funded, the New York Times Fund, and they should try to identify other resources that don't have the same restrictive notion of who is a victim. Because one of the things that we have been finding is that as time goes on, more people are coming to the disaster centers, and more of them don't fit the definition of exactly who is being harmed, and that's the reason why they're being turned away and not getting benefits, more so than the failure to provide documentation.
I know that you don't want to get into exact numbers, but is there any way to estimate how many people we're talking about? Are we talking in the hundreds, in the thousands?
Yeah, I'm just a very bad judge of that. I'm sorry, but I know that the disaster center itself and the first week or so, they were dealing with they were giving out benefits to 400, 500, 600 people a day. It's clear to me that the overall numbers of people being served have gone down to some degree, but that it's still quite busy. What I can't tell is how many people are actually getting benefits there, because there are a lot of people who are coming and being processed and essentially being told to come back weeks later for an appointment with the different providers because they're so backlogged at this point. You know, the numbers of non-citizens who we're seeing at the table is not in the hundreds per day. It's in the, you know, a handful of people a day, maybe 10, maybe 15 a day, some days less, some days more. And what's happening to them, we are not always following them through to find out what happens at the different locations where they're trying to get the benefits. We're there more to tell them what they're eligible for, and we're doing some kind of case management and advocacy when we see inequities or when we hear about problems. But we don't have the capacity to follow them through the whole process.
Janet, in a bleak job market and without general adequacy of benefits such as unemployment insurance, which really would need at least another $100 a week in the unemployment packet to even begin to be reasonable for people to live in New York, how sparse, how effective are the benefits that those people who are fortunate enough to be getting them in order for them to sustain themselves on a week-to-week basis in New York? How far will it carry them?
Well, I think for the people who are getting unemployment benefits, the people who are here, you know, citizens and lawful permanent residents, it's going to be hard, but they're going to manage on some level. Hopefully they have some savings. And to the extent that they may have lived or lost certain things that were particular to the disaster, they might have been compensated, if not completely, to some extent. I think for the undocumented workers or the people who are not eligible for unemployment insurance, the benefits are really just stopgap measures that they're getting. And the real fear that I see for the immigrant community is that there's going to be a real backlash, not just anti-immigrant sentiment, which I think is certainly an issue, but also a fear on the part of employers who seemed to not be afraid before to hire undocumented workers, but who I think now are going to be much more fearful of doing that. And so I'm concerned that low-wage workers are going to have a harder time getting jobs even than they had before, because employers are going to be reluctant to hire someone who's not here with the proper papers.
And I guess lastly, on the question of any kind of an amnesty, Jose Serrano, a legislator in New York, had been discussing some level of amnesty for those who were involved in work at the World Trade Center. Is there any indication that there will be any lessening of restrictions for those particular groups of people and their families?
I have not been following the legislative debate on this. There's certainly a lot of sentiment for immediate families of victims, people who lost their lives in particular, to try to somehow correct immigration status so that families of people who were killed in the disaster are not left high and dry, are not subject to deportation, et cetera. I don't know. I mean, that, it seems to me, has a good chance of passing, but that's not going to affect the thousands of workers. Whether there's going to be some relief for people who lost their jobs only, I would be surprised if that came to pass, but I don't really know, and I think it would be great if it did. I think a really strong legislative initiative should be to provide unemployment insurance for these workers, and so far there's been no serious talk about that.
And lastly for me, in terms of the very rough numbers that you were talking about, is that an indication that either there is very little outreach in the immigrant communities on this issue, or that people are reticent to come to a government-sponsored program? I mean, are they coming to churches or other facilities, do you think?
Well, I should clarify that the numbers that I said of the handful of people who, you know, the 10 to 20 people who may be coming to the immigration table reflects a small subset of the number of immigrants who are actually showing up at the disaster center. I think that people are coming, and they're coming more and more. There are a lot of immigrant faces that I see. I just don't know the facts about their situation. I don't know who they are. I don't know what their immigration status is. I don't know if they're naturalized citizens. There are a lot of interpreters being used at the disaster center in the Chinese languages, in Spanish interpreters. It's quite buzzing with foreign languages in there. So the question of how many people are coming, it's really what I started off by saying. In the beginning, I didn't see very many folk who were coming from Chinatown, for example, and in the last 2 weeks, I've seen a lot of people from Chinatown. What I don't know is exactly what's happening to all of them. There has been a huge amount of outreach to the different immigrant communities, especially in Lower Manhattan, and I know that there's funding coming down the pike to increase that outreach, and that the agencies at the Worth Street site have been really trying to accommodate the different communities that had been reluctant at first to come. The reason why people were reluctant is you have to show IDs, you have to get through police, especially that was more at the pier than at Worth Street, and it wasn't until signs and newspaper articles went into the foreign language press that people started to feel more comfortable, and until there was outreach done by the immigrant-friendly community-based organizations.
Well, Janet Sable, Supervising Attorney of the Immigration Unit at the Legal Aid Society, I'd like to thank you very much for speaking with Building Bridges, your Community and Labor Report.
This has been Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report in Exile with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Building Bridges in Exile can be heard on WBAI in Exile, www.wbix.org, Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. To contact Building Bridges, you can email us at knash@igc.org. You can hear archived sound from past Building Bridges specials at www.buildingbridgesradio.org. For Building Bridges in Exile, this is Ken Nash with Mimi Rosenberg in solidarity.